you. Hey everybody, I'm Amy, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Amy.
Hi. So I'm really glad to be here. I've never been to this meeting before, so it's nice. Never been to a meeting on the east side, so thanks for welcoming me here. So I'm just going to do your basic what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, since, you know, all I've got to share is my story, so I figure I'll stick with that. And just for some basics, I have 4.5 years of abstinence, and I've been in the program for probably about 5.5 years. So it really took me a whole year of being in the program to get both feet in and kind of like for it to click for me. For a whole lot of that first year, I was really waiting for somebody to give me the diet plan so that I could execute the diet plan and then move on with my life. And eventually I found a sponsor who took me through the steps in a really structured way and clicked for me. So I'll talk more about that. But yeah, so abstinent for about 4.5 years now. My abstinence is no binging, no purging, no dieting. And binging is defined for me as making eating like the thing that I am doing for the evening. Like what I'm gonna do is sit down and eat. So it's making eating like the event. And also no sugary desserts and no cured meats and no like gravy that's like Thanksgiving gravy. And those are that's my abstinence. And something that's coming to mind, I'm just winging it here, by the way. I hear in program a lot that over time and abstinence, the road narrows, implying that you take away more and more foods as you kind of, as you notice more foods that give you trouble. But I don't like that phrasing because to me it sounds restrictive, like, oh my god, it even gets worse from here. And that's not been how I've experienced it, where I like to think of it as the road gets clearer and I become just willing to give up these more like yellow light foods that aren't really the foods that I have an allergy to, but are still foods that I screw around with when I'm having feelings. So one example for that for me is potato chips, where they're not a red light food for me. They're not on my abstinence list, but over time I've just decided that I don't eat them anymore. 'Cause when I do, my stomach feels a certain way, and then my brain thinks I'm depressed. When it's really, I just ate some potato chips and my stomach is feeling a certain way. And so I got to have some awareness around that experience often enough in abstinence that I've decided that I just don't want that consequence of potato chips anymore and I can choose not to eat them. So I'll still stare at them and contemplate it, but I'm able to have the space to think about how I'll feel afterwards, and that's been a gift of abstinence for me. So I really like to think about it as the road gets clearer, and right now I'm having that experience of awareness around pizza and around popcorn, but I haven't come to the place yet where I'm willing to give those up. So I just keep paying attention, you know, when I eat pizza, how do I feel? And am I willing to continue to have that feeling? So far I am, and we'll see if that changes over time. I'm guessing it will, just based on my experience thus far. So that's a little bit around abstinence, and I'll just dive into what it was like. What it was like was hell, as I think all of us have experienced, and that's why we're in this room. I have both sides of this disease. So for most of my kind of compulsive overeating experience, I was restricting, and I did the yo-yo. But it was mostly around over-exercising and restricting, calorie counting. And then not until later on, I had the experience where I was doing my usual yo-yo thing, and then I was in a poor relationship, and I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to lose weight. And so I did that, and I got into my skinny jeans that I had been carting around with me for 10 years. And I did it, you know, I restricted and over-exercised my way into those pants, and I hit my goal, and lo and behold, my boyfriend at the time was still an ass, and I was still really unhappy, and I decided that if hitting this goal wasn't going to change my life, then I might as well at least eat some cake while I'm at it. And so at that point, I was just off to the races, as they say, and I just started binging my face off, and I could not make myself get on another diet. I was seeing a therapist at the time, and I just kept saying, you know, I'm getting bigger and bigger, and I'm seeing my face getting wider and wider, and why can't I just make myself go to yoga? I just need to go to yoga, and then it'll be right. And she said, well, maybe you might want to think about going to OA. And I was like, no, that's not the issue. I just need to go to yoga. And so I am very much one of those people who came for the vanity and stayed for the sanity. And I have, since getting abstinent, lost weight in OA without having to do a damn thing. And that was eye-opening for me, and also learning that, I guess I'm just assuming we can say individual foods. Yeah, so learning that I can eat a cheeseburger and french fries without gaining 100 pounds was mind-blowing to me. So once I became abstinent, then my food leveled out to such a way where I wasn't calorie counting, and I didn't need to do that to feel safe in my body. And that was a huge shift for me. Because I thought if I wasn't micromanaging everything that went into my body, then I was going to be, you know, massive. And to see that that wasn't the case still doesn't make sense to my brain, but I have experienced that to be true. So I trust it now. So through seeing a therapist at the time is how I came into OA. I at the time thought that binging was eating all of one food, like all of one large bag of potato chips or something like that. And that's how I kind of had it stuck in my head. And so I thought, well, that's not what I do. I eat, you know, half a loaf of bread and half a pizza and half of the sweet, salty, crunchy things and half the cake. And so I'm not eating all of one thing. I'm just eating for 4 hours in the evening. But there did come a day where I ate an entire package of bacon. And it wasn't even that I ate the whole thing that scared me. It was that wasn't enough, that I wanted to go to the store and get another package, and I knew full well if I did, I would eat the whole thing. And the only reason I didn't was my boyfriend at the time was coming home, and I didn't want him to see me do that. But if I had been living by myself, hell yeah, I would have gone to the store and gotten a whole other package and cooked that thing right up. And so the very next day, then I went to an OA meeting. and learned that there's other many variations on binging and restricting and compulsive overeating I have since found out about. But what happened for me at that first OA meeting was I heard people sharing how they did life, and never before have I heard that. I had always, you know, they say that as addicts, we have a living problem. And for us, food is our solution, but it's really a living problem that we have. And that is very true for me. I just do not know how to be in this world in a sane way. Because there are times when just being in the world gets too loud for me, and I need to tone it down. And so that first OA meeting, I heard people just sharing how they did life and sharing that, like, yeah, it's hard sometimes, and here's how I deal with it. I also subsequently realized that I could come to a meeting and say, I'm suicidal. I just went and got, you know, a bunch of binge food and ate it all night. And people just said, great, thanks, keep coming back. And that was it. Nobody's going to, you know, call the ambulance for you. You can just share what you need to share. And it's lovingly accepted. And that was huge for me because there were just, I just needed to share the crazy in my head for a while and get it out and have it be so accepted without commenting. So I really love the tradition of no crosstalk in these meetings because it keeps it at such a safe space. And I also love that somebody can share something really gut-wrenchingly painful, and the next person can share, like, the happiest experience they had just the other day, and that you don't have to modify your own experience for somebody else's. And I really love that in these meetings, that each one is just taken as its own thing. And so that's what hooked me. That's what kept me coming back to the rooms. And I heard you should get a sponsor, so I got a sponsor. And that's when I was looking for the diet plan. And so, and none of the sponsors I have had ever gave me a diet plan, by the way. And so my first one, she ended up dropping me because she relapsed and couldn't keep sponsoring, and then I got a second sponsor, and I ended up dropping her because it wasn't clicking for me. There was just, it was a little too loosey-goosey for me, and I needed somebody that was going to take me through something a bit more structured. And so I had heard at the Saturday morning U-District meeting that there's a lot of recovery there and a lot of sponsors, and so I went, and that's where I found my current sponsor. I think she just gave a share. I don't think she even shared her story, but I wanted what she had, so I went up to her at the end of the meeting and asked her to be my sponsor, and she said yes, and then she has taken me through the steps, through the big book, in a very structured way so that I always knew what step I was on. Each step is writing. There's always a writing component to the step, so I always have homework. Let's see, I talked to her in the beginning up through step 4-5 times a week for a couple of months, and that was very helpful, too, just to have that connection early on. And I also, after my first 30 days, I relapsed. I got the typical 30-day, oh, I got this, moment. And And I realized I did not. So I do appreciate that experience, because I now know what it's like to have abstinence and then lose it. And I think there's just something about having that clarity that's been really helpful for me. So yeah, it took me through the steps, and it took me about, I would say, a year to get through them. I wasn't really worried about the four steps because I really like thinking about myself, and so that did not concern me. And then I also wasn't terribly worried about the ninth step because I had an ex-boyfriend that I thought, well, I can contact him and do my amends, and then it's everything's going to be roses, and we're going to get back together. And so I was really kind of on a tear to get to the ninth step. And lo and behold, when I got there, my sponsor said that my amends to him is to never contact him again. And so I've been successful. But I like to share that because it just shows how important working through the steps with a sponsor is, because if it's left up to our own brains, it's going to go sideways real quick. And the one amends that I was really scared of doing was to my grandmother, because we're not that close, and I didn't want to have to like put all this stuff out there. Tell her that I was a compulsive overeater and explain what that is and have her be judgy and all of these things that I had in my head. And my sponsor said that my amends with her was to just go and spend the day with her and do whatever she wanted to do. And so what we did was go to the casino and play some slots and have a burger. And that was it. So it was fine and dandy. And that ended up being the very first amends that I did. And so I definitely agree with do the amends that you're most scared of doing first, just to get them over with and realize that it's not so bad. And through all of the ones that I've done, none of them have like gone poorly. They're a little awkward, but there hasn't been anything drastically terrible through any of them. So if you're nervous, don't worry. It'll be okay. You will survive. So that is what happened. And now I am a sponsor, which I enjoy to varying degrees on different days. But it says in the big book, at one point when Bill was sponsoring and he said that, you know, but nobody's staying sober, and I think Lois told him, yeah, but you are. And I have absolutely had moments where my sponsees saved my butt because I wanted to break my abstinence, and the thought came to mind, well, I have sponsees that are looking to me for help, and so I'm responsible to them. And so that's been huge. And just feeling useful is so good. Feeling like, oh, maybe there is something I know a little bit about that I can pass on has been really wonderful. And also learning balance. And I just had a conversation with my sponsor around, I can't work my sponsees programs for them. And so learning how to have that separation between what's my side of the street and what's their side of the street has also been helpful. So what it's like now is I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. When I first got into the program, my sponsor had me read that book, Beyond Our Wildest Dreams, and I can honestly say that today my life is not only so much better than it was, but beyond anything I even thought I could have. And that doesn't mean that it's easy or perfect, but I have a spirituality now that I can depend on when things get rough, and just the fellowship of this group, just knowing that I can go anywhere in the world and still have community is so, it helps me feel so safe. And that I have a solution now to any problem I have in my life. I have a solution. It doesn't mean I adhere to it all the time. But no matter what, I can pick up that solution anytime I want to, and that is to connect with my higher power. And I'm not one that had an easy time with the third step. I grew up Christian, and ended up having to fire that God that I grew up with, and that was very freeing for me. And now I will say out loud that in the beginning I had two higher powers, so I needed an image of a higher power who was all loving and compassionate, and at other times I needed an image of a higher power who was like strong and powerful. And so loving and compassionate was the fairy godmother from Cinderella, and strong and powerful was The Rock from wrestling. And so those were my two higher powers early on, and it worked. It got me through. And now my understanding of my higher power is broader than that, but it changes all the time, and I like that I can kind of call up whatever support I'm needing at the time, and so just having the freedom to do that with the way that this program is laid out is a wonderful thing, that I don't have to justify it to anybody or to myself. It can just be what I need at the time, and that's really helpful and freeing. Let's see what else, what it's like. I have been the same size for 3 years, and that is a miracle. I have worn out pants just because I've had them for a long time, and never before has that happened, because I was always up and down and up and down and up and down. And some recovery wins I always like to share. On just this past Valentine's Day, some coworkers came around the office in the morning and handed out a cookie and some candy, and I was able to say thank you with, like, honest gratefulness for the gesture, and then leave it there on my desk for the day, take it home, and throw it in the trash. And that is a miracle. It didn't talk to me, it just wasn't my food, and I didn't need to eat it for them or myself, and I could just take the gesture part of it and leave the food. And that was a miracle for me. And other pieces, I can call people on the phone now. I've learned how to make outreach calls and ask people how they're doing. And I've learned that it's okay to call people when I'm not doing well. Like, I don't need to worry about, oh, am I going to bring down their day or anything like that. I know for me, whenever I got outreach calls, when somebody's having a bad day, I feel better for being somebody that they've reached out to. That always feels good for me. So I know if I'm doing that for somebody else, then that's how this program works. So I think I've run out of steam. That's what I've got. Yeah, so thanks for letting me be here and share my story.
Thanks.